6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday Holocult. So you know what that means. You've chosen us to kickstart your work week off. And that's cool. And we appreciate you. I don't know how cool it is. That's cool for us. Don't know how cool it is for you. But we appreciate you. And we're happy to be here. We're happy that you chose us. We are diving right back into the OKC bombing. Kyle's coming in with part two. So if you haven't listened to part one, go back to next week. Please do so, because that's how things work. Part one, then part two.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss out on that.
Chronological order.
Chronological. And if you don't have part one, you're not going to know what we're talking about in part two. It's simple science. If you're new here, welcome, first off. If you don't want to listen to me and Kyle talk about just show stuff for a while, you're going to want to fast forward to like 6 minutes. Then we'll be into the good stuff that you're really here for. But if you do like listening to us talk, hang out. Hang out. And check us out at all our social medias. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You'll find us. Come be part of the community. Join the cult. It's a whole thing. It's a good time. It's a real good time. If you want a different experience, pop on over to YouTube. And subscribe, first and foremost. We're trying to get them numbers up. Turn on the notification bell, and you can see this very show you're listening to straight from our mouths. Right from it. I'm looking directly at you right now.
Yeah.
Just how it works. It's cool.
It's magic.
Cool, different experience. Digital magic.
Mm.
You can see that we have faces for podcasting.
Yeah.
So do that. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to feature on our future Thursday listener experience show, which we are ramping back up, which you'll probably already have heard one by this time. Kyle's got some details you're gonna want.
I do. It's in the show notes. If you can't find the show notes, it's hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. It is the best way to get a hold of us, safest way to get a hold of us. Send it there. We'll get it. file it in the patented system, get it on the show. You're famous. We're not. It's just how it works.
That's how it is.
It's just how it works. And this week, giving thanks, I'm going to give thanks to Holly Madison for putting on for us as much as she has. It is surreal and mind-blowing. So if you're into the things that she does, her podcasts, her, I mean, just absolute media empire, go fuck with her, you know?
Yeah.
Check her stuff out.
She has. She's put us on for quite a while now, yeah. And, like, it's cool.
Yeah.
Because she didn't have to.
No. And not that she needs our help at all, because she definitely doesn't, but, hey, this is us being thankful and attempting at our return in the favor.
Yep, just showing some love. So yeah, definitely
much love.
Go over there and support her and just, you know, give back to what's been given. So if you'd like to support the show, speaking of which, Patreon, $7 a month, that's less than a value meal. This is a value Patreon. So you can get extra episodes. There's over 50 now. You can get our regular shows, these you're listening to right now, early access, no ads. You get casket breath jams. Be the first to learn about new merch drops. Sometimes you get merch coupons, all kinds of cool stuff over there. Also, share the show word of mouth. Oh, no, hold on. Jump the shark there. Hollowskypodcast.com. You can go over there and get some merch, some good hollow swag. Got shirts over there, hats, stickers, all kinds of stuff. Clearing out some back inventory before we get some new 2025 shirts and stuff in. So we're going to clear that out first. Now you can share the show word of mouth. It's a cool thing to do. Just throw our name out there. Manifest the Hollow Cult just taking over, just being an empire. So that's what we're trying to do. If there's other paranormal media creators you'd like for us to collab with, throw our names at them. Throw our names at them. If we can get our schedules to line up, we will gladly link up and do something cool. That being said, next thing to do is leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. When I find them, I'll gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from Van Meter Vortex. Solid name.
Definitely.
Van Meter says, thanks, 5 stars. Hey guys, thanks for the awesome, intuitive episode, and I just got my QR code stickers today, ready to rep the Hollow Cult in little Dawsonville, Georgia. Each episode is packed with more conspiracy theories than a family reunion. We try our best. Yeah. You know, we try our best.
For some reason, I just got a vivid visual of them sticking the QR codes all over their face.
I mean, I hope so. Tattoo the QR code.
Oof. It's dedication.
It's a good call there.
Dedication.
Yeah. Van Meter, we appreciate you. We appreciate you.
Very much.
Very much so. I forgot about the QR code stickers. If anybody wants some QR code stickers, email me your shipping address and I'll send you some, because yeah, I got a bunch still.
Or if you buy stuff from the store, I'd try to slip some in there.
Kyle's got some,
yeah,
some goodies.
Yeah. You always get free stickers with your orders, so.
See? All the more reason,
yeah,
to get some cool stuff. But yeah, Van Meter, thanks for taking the time to leave us a 5-star rating and review. We appreciate the kind words, as always. To the people that leave us 1 star, you can suck it. So, yeah.
Facts.
Let's get right into the part 2 of the OKC here.
Yeah. So last episode we covered kind of the official story, some of the conspiracy snippets of it, and we're going to get back into it.
Yeah, you're going to have to go back and listen to that, because
yeah,
people saw rockets leaving the building.
Yeah.
That's been seared in my brain.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it was one of the only times I've heard that description. You know, given this is like the first time I've really, really dug into the OKC bombing, but it's definitely a wild ride. And so back to a little bit of the official story situation here. But I got to digging around and I found a piece of the FBI investigation. And it's where they said that the rear axle of the Ryder truck McVeigh used that they found that, and it had vehicle identification on the rear axle. So they were able to use that to track down where the Ryder truck came from. From there, the FBI put out a statement about that. They end up going to this rental location, talk to the employees, and the employees said, hey, two men came in here to rent this truck. The FBI put out a statement about two bombers and how one was still at large. However, after 2 months, they call it off, saying that the other bomber was actually just misidentified as a military guy with zero connection to McVeigh. And it was just that he just had happened to come in the day before McVeigh.
Not even on the same day?
That's what they're saying. I don't know that that's true. That's their excuse, is that, no, the mix-up was, you know how the brain is. The brain's a little wonky. They just, and why, I don't even, that's the other, it's kind of a good point. You made my brain think, Steve. Why would you just accidentally, I mean, I guess I realized that McVeigh was military prior all of this. It doesn't mean he came in military fatigues. So outside of that, why would your brain misidentify a military guy the day before and place it with McVeigh at that point?
Yeah, like never in my life have I like driven through McDonald's on a Tuesday and someone be like, you know, that guy that drove through here Monday, probably in cahoots with this guy.
Exactly.
That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Bro, that's what I'm saying. So basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of the second bomber theory. That's what they're trying to do here. But the crazy thing is that not only the FBI did this, but other people did this. They were even able to track down like over, I think it was over 20 some odd people that, like in this case here, they go, the FBI and independent researchers go to a local tire shop and said, oh yeah, McVeigh actually stopped here asking for directions to that federal building. And there was another man with him who was darker complected than McVeigh was.
How?
Oh, yeah. Wrap your brain around that.
How are you going to plan the largest domestic act of terrorism in Americans' history and not know where you need to take the bomb?
Bro, that's where I'm at. How does that one happen? Seems a little sussy if you ask me.
Yeah. I'm almost more on board with the rocket leaving the building than him not knowing where the building is. Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm at. You don't do all this planning and then not even know where your target's at.
Yeah, that's sus.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole point of that was, it was just which, you know, me and Steve kind of break down the whole him being lost thing, but it still aids, you know, reaches back to the, there is no Middle Eastern connection here. That's gone, right? We're trying to get rid of that narrative.
This adds to it.
Yeah.
This kind of fuels absolutely, that fire.
Yeah. And I found a bunch more information that'll also corroborate that later on. But now we're going to get into a man named J.D. Cash. He did a shitload of looking into this. And once again, back in a cooler time, he ends up getting a random phone call from fucking Interpol. Right? Interpol had found out J.D. Cash had been investigating the OKC bombing, and there was a man there who essentially was like, listen, I know you've been digging around and I'm tired of trying to get the FBI to do their job. So he tells JD, he's like, dude, you need to start asking about the German. Andy the German is what they called him.
That's what Interpol said?
Yes. You need to start asking about this individual. And apparently his full name is Andreas Strauss-Meyer. So JD calls McVeigh's legal team and starts asking about the German. The legal team is absolutely kind of shocked and dumbfounded. And they're like, JD, how, like, McVeigh was trying to get in touch with a man in Elohim City. This group in Elohim, and this is kind of gets, it kind of goes all over the place tracking this German guy. This group, Elohim City, was linked to the CSA. Carol Howe, known as Freya, was in the CSA, and she was rather extreme. One day, JD Cash calls her and asks about the German. She said that this German in particular was really interested in blowing up federal buildings. Furthermore, she told JD she knows a lot about what's going on up there and said, I told them that all of this would end this way. Then she later reveals that she actually was an undercover agent with the FBI working within Elohim City. Let me retract that. She wasn't an undercover agent. She was what do you call that? Dang it. Where they're snitching, basically. Can't think of the word.
Neither can I.
Informant.
Yep.
And she was an informant with the FBI is what it was. Howe had actually been filing reports about Elohim City and how they were planning attacks on federal buildings. So now you have a narrative much like 9/11 where they have prior knowledge of the attacks, the FBI does. Howe gave all the information on it, names, dates, targets, everything. She's feeding this to the FBI. The FBI even cut off Elohim from agents trying to investigate it. So they're burying all the leads to Elohim City and the German and everything regarding these possible federal attacks. Strauss-Meyer, at this point, just straight up ghosts. He went through Mexico, then back to Europe. The federal government didn't even want to track him down and talk to him. They let him become a ghost. They're like, yeah, we want nothing to do with this guy. You need to disappear. Strauss-Meyer ends up doing an interview that I watched. He sounds like an idiot and looks like an idiot. He does not look like somebody. I'm sorry. If you by chance listen to this, you look like an idiot. And you don't look like anybody.
Fucking nerd.
That is going to be a massive mastermind. Not to mention the way you articulate yourself does not give me mastermind qualities.
It's the same vibes as go not knowing where your target is.
Yes.
Stopping at the tire shop to get figure out where you're going.
Yeah. I mean no disrespect, but wow. Anyways, he claimed it only met McVeigh one time at a gun show and had no idea why McVeigh would even be attempting to call him. So that's how Elohim City got drug into all of this, was they traced McVeigh's phone calls to Elohim City looking for Andy the German. A former Marine had been looking into the bombing, Lieutenant Colonel Roger Charles. He thinks the entire cover-up basically hinges on Andy the German. Roger found a document that had a blacked-out name. It went out to the FBI field offices, but the blacked-out name took up exactly 23 spaces, which is the exact same amount of the German's real name, middle name included. Same amount of spaces. So he's does that 100% nail it down? No, it does not. But pretty solid link.
Odd coincidence.
Odd coincidence is a very good way to put that. Plus, someone said that the German and McVeigh had a better friendship than he let on. McVeigh also tried calling the German 2 days before the bombing, and it was said that McVeigh had a plan to escape through Mexico, which is exactly what the German did to get out of country.
Weird.
Roger thinks that the German was protected on all of this, that this is what the files were pointing to. He thinks that the German was protected by the German government and the FBI because they had links to white supremacy and Nazis as well. Plus, it was apparently a thing that, so the German had links to Nazi organization and white supremacy. I did not know this. Apparently, it was a thing that the neo-Nazis in America, they were creating their own little sections. Apparently, quote, I say this with finger asterisks and
air
shit.
Quotes.
Air quotes. Apparently, real Nazi groups from Germany would send over people to make sure that these neo-Nazi groups in America were spitting the right messages. Sounds fucking bananas, but apparently that was a thing. So you go back to J.D. Cash. He thinks that what may have happened was the FBI knew a bombing was going to take place. They knew almost all of the details. But the FBI also had a big fumble with Waco. So what the FBI did in this case, well, is possible by JD's thinking, is that they're like, listen, we fucked up big time with Waco. It was terrible. We need to win here, boys. We need to win. All right. So they get all these, you know, they got their informant in Elohim City. And the CSA organization, you have other sources saying, hey, bombing is going to take place these dates, these times, at these possible things. So the FBI is like, listen, we know it's going to happen, and we need a W. Let's stop it right before it happens. Let's make it look like we are the cat's ass. And so they let it play out.
Oops.
And it goes, because
they didn't stop it right before it happened is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oops.
And if memory serves me correct, I think the original plan from McVeigh was the bombing was supposed to happen at 11 o'clock. If I remember right. So maybe that had something to do with the confusion, is that he jumped the timeline by 2 hours.
Oops.
Yeah. And it ends up playing out the way that it does.
It's crazy to me that Interpol would contact a journalist.
Yeah.
Not even necessarily a journalist. This was just a guy looking into stuff, right?
Because
I don't know if he was like writing for a newspaper or
I don't remember either. I know he would come in on a radio show too and talk about stuff.
Because you have to assume that Interpol reached out with this information probably to American
100%.
Yeah, American
FBI agencies,
CIA.
All that. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And if it got to a point where they're being so ignored that they're like, "You know what? This guy over here is doing some digging. We're just going to throw him a bone here."
Yep.
Like that's
it's crazy.
Crazy.
It's crazy. And it's not, and to be fair, in you know, our recent years, and this would be after 9/11 and the OKC situation, you've heard of the FBI, like essentially entrapping people, radicalizing them, giving, like selling them explosives, and then having a counter team come in later and break it up and go, look what we did. Look what we stopped a major terrorist attack.
Isn't that crazy?
It's like you also created it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Weird that you thwarted something that you put together.
Yeah.
Good job, team.
Right.
Good job.
Right. So, and as I and with my research, I know it's kind of hectic here and there. So, but I keep finding these little details and I want to include them. I saw how the government at one point had been testing truck bombs at the time, and the military was storing Ryder trucks at Camp Gruber, which was about 2.5 hours from Oklahoma.
That's like,
if that's not
testing truck bombs for what?
Research.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I might get into it a little bit later, but if I recall, it was like they were kind of just building profiles on car and truck bombs to, I guess, thwart them or maybe see what type of damage they would
like cause. How to build one for a patsy.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that stands out weird to me, it never in my life, when I was lost to the point, like we got cell phones now, so getting lost isn't really a thing, but not my life of driving a vehicle existed before cell phones. Never when I was lost and I stopped to ask directions for to get to somewhere, never, ever, ever have I thought, I'm going to stop at a tire shop.
Yeah, valid point.
Right?
Valid point.
Gas station? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Never a tire shop.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
And I'm going to assume, I'm going to go out on a limb here, that if the town was big enough to have a tire shop, probably big enough to have a gas station or two.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is strange.
It's weird.
It is strange. I also found another anomaly that I believe you might remember better than me. I think it happened also during 9/11. However, in this case, someone calls the executive secretary's office at the Justice Department that the Murrah building had been bombed. This phone call took place 24 minutes prior to the bombing happening.
So nobody's again, got their timelines
once
on.
Once again, somebody fucked up the timeline.
It happened during the JFK assassination. I don't know if it happened during 9/11.
I think it did.
Somebody did call and report that the president had been killed. It was a while.
I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah.
I do remember you saying that.
Somebody called and reported that the president had been killed. I don't know if they called a radio station or a news station or what it was, but reported the assassination of the president before it ever happened.
That is strange.
Nobody's on the right time.
No.
You'd think if you were a government agency planning some sort of landscape, geopolitical landscape altering event, you would get your time together.
You'd think. But you're also dealing with a bunch of people too, so that causes problems.
And also, like, you're the government. You just make up your own narrative, so it doesn't really matter.
True story.
So
true story.
They're probably not that worried about it. They're like,
It's also easy when you own all the media sources and outlets.
Yeah, they're like, sure, this woman called and just told us the president was assassinated 30 minutes before he was assassinated, but we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, we'll bury it.
Yeah, it's fine.
We'll make it go away.
It's fine. People are going to be way more worried about the assassinated president than they're going to be worried about, you know, this woman talking about it before it happened.
That's a true story. It's not, you're not wrong.
It's a smokescreen, really.
You're not wrong. So other anomalies that I found, McVeigh actually writes a letter to his sister and he tells her about how he was a part of CIA special operations and how they were flying drugs into the country, which if you recall, McVeigh did apply to be special operations in the military.
Interesting.
They said he might have gotten injured and failed out of it or whatever it was. Also, I don't know if it's real, but he apparently made a claim about how his ass always hurt because he had a microchip implanted in his ass.
That took a turn I wasn't ready for.
Yeah. So here before long.
You don't say.
Here before long, we're going to go down that rabbit hole. I decided to chase that one. And I found some, honestly, pretty fucking compelling evidence about the whole thing.
Down the rabbit hole, up the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
You know.
I saw I saw a comment where he had left the military in 91, but I also saw military footage of him in 93. So there's that.
The timeline's fucked up again.
Timeline is definitely fucked up. McVeigh's initial execution was pushed back because the FBI withheld thousands of documents from McVeigh's legal team.
The FBI wouldn't do that.
Sure. Also, I saw where there was no autopsy after the execution. Furthermore, people reported him still breathing and that his coffin was a decoy. Almost immediately, a be on the lookout was issued for two Middle Eastern men. And these things that I just mentioned about the chip, the decoy, all that stuff. I circle back on that stuff because I use that as rabbit holes to jump down. But immediately after the bombing had taken place, there was a be on the lookout for two Middle Eastern men in blue jogging suits who were seen running from the building prior to the explosion and how they had gotten into a brown pickup. As I'm digging around about McVeigh, I find some interesting articles. Everyone from the military said that he was a perfect soldier. The news spun the narrative that he was angry when he left the military. But what had happened was he trained day in and day out. This dude, while everybody else, apparently McVeigh wanted to be a Green Beret. While everyone else was like chilling in their barracks on their downtime or going and eating, going out, McVeigh was out training. He would be on his own with over 100 pounds in his pack. Training every day, day in, day out. The dude was dedicated.
You know, if the government shoved microchips up my ass, I would probably be angry. Yeah. Have an angry demeanor about me as well.
Yeah. But everybody's saying that he wasn't angry. When McVeigh went to try out for Special Forces, he got injured and had to quit. Terry Guild, McVeigh's former platoon leader, told reporters that... like, everybody spun it that McVeigh was pissed when he didn't make it into special operations. His platoon leader, he's like, no, he wasn't mad. He was just really, really disappointed. Like, he took it to heart. Like, it bummed him the fuck out because this is something he really wanted to do. So from there, apparently, in 92, which also fucks with the timeline because that video was supposedly in 93 when he was still in the military. So that fucks with this timeline. Although somebody could have been wrong on the video.
It sounds like nobody knows what the timeline
was. Yeah, it seems a little wonky. But apparently in 92, McVeigh takes a job with Burns International Security Services. He was assigned to CALSPAN, which was a Pentagon contractor that conducts classified research in advanced aerospace rocketry and electronic warfare. They commented on him and said that he was a model employee. So now... you have two for two, the military and these contractors saying this dude was basically the best at what he did. He's perfect. It's everything you could want in a worker, in a military, soldier. He was it.
In a patsy.
Mm-hmm. But if you take into consideration that McVeigh claimed several times to several different people, he had a microchip implanted in his ass. And the fact that CALSPAN dealt in electronic warfare.
Oh, that is weird.
We might be onto something. So
that is weird.
And I find some examples. And we might go in and out of this. I don't remember how I structured it, but here we go.
In and out is good termage for...
very true. Very true.
Microchip.
Very true.
Termage. That's also good termage. Termage is.
Yeah, I agree.
Terminology.
We're good at term stuff.
We're good at... word,
yeah,
stuff,
yeah. So you have the case of Dennis Sweeney, a student that murdered Allard Lowstein, a civil rights and anti-war activist. Lowstein for years tried to prove that a conspiracy was responsible for the deaths of John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. Sweeney even protested with Lowstein, but he ended up shooting him 7 times. When doing this, he remained calm and didn't flee. Sweeney said that the CIA had implanted him with a telemetric brain device years earlier and transmitted voices to him through his dental work. So there's another one. Now you got you have McVeigh that talks about the microchip. Now you have, and you have a real life case of Sweeney talking about it in his murder of this person
through his dental work.
Right. Then you have a few months after the OKC bombing, a man named Christopher Scally claimed to take direction from electronic appliances. He was the I-80 freeway sniper. When he was arrested, he said he was hearing voices through radio waves and electronic devices. So it sounds crazy, but if you dig around, you'll find people saying that McVeigh's anger was a sudden and weird flip. And more than a few people have described McVeigh as acting as a robot. Then you look into Calspan a little further. Calspan and electromagnetic mind control have ties to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Calspan was founded in 1946 as Cornell Aeronautical Laboratory. It was also the contract for a contract base for the CIA's Human Ecology Fund. Supposedly, this fund was financial support for classified experimentation at the country's leading universities. Cornell Aerospace was recognized in 72 and renamed Calspan. Then it gets picked up by Ervin Industries. Ervin Calspan merges with Space Industries International, which is a commercial space flight venture. McVeigh was assigned to Advanced Technology Center in Buffalo, which was Calspan ATC. And supposedly they have a large energy shock tunnel, radar facilities, and a radio frequency simulator facility for evaluating electronic warfare techniques. One of their labs there specializes in microscopic engineering. A week before the OKC bombing, newspapers apparently reported on a disembodied, rumbling, low-frequency hum in the area. Which is weird, right?
It's weird.
This gets linked to brain telemetering systems, which are a subset of the Pentagon's non-lethal weapons. I saw a snippet from the Defense News March 20th, 1995. Naval Research Lab attempts to meld neurons and chips. Studies may produce army of zombies. Future battles could be waged with genetically engineered organisms such as rodents, whose minds are controlled by computer chips engineered with living brain cells.
Neuralink.
Also, did you note how much like space reference, aerotechnology shit I was just spouting off?
Yeah.
Super fucking scary.
Yeah. I just keep thinking about back to the I-80 sniper whose kitchen appliances told him to do it.
Yeah.
He would not handle Alexa well.
Oh, no.
And I love that they just... So that really happened. This guy really did this because talking to his appliances and the consumer market's like, you know what? Talking appliances now.
And we're on to something. We're on to something. You have Paul Brodnicki, who was a speaker at Conference of Electronic Warfare. Some of the topics were radio frequency self-protection. This was also a Calspan scientist. Even weirder was that the CNN announced that American Psychological Association would go to OKC to treat survivors after the explosion happened.
To treat. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. Okay. That's weird.
Yeah. Led by a Dr. Louis Jalon West from... So basically, we'll just say Dr. West from UCLA's Neuropsychiatric Institute. Dr. West, just so happens, has studied the use of drugs as adjuncts to interpersonal manipulation or assault, and also dealt with remote electronic mind control experimentation at UCLA. So this Dr. West is basically who they're sending in with the American Psychological Association to evaluate people. Dr. West has even suggested the use of drugs to control, quote-unquote, bothersome segments of population. Then you have the Stemocever. This thing was fucking developed in the late 1950s by Dr. Joseph Delgado and funded by the CIA and the Office of Naval Research. The Stemocever is a little transponder put in the head of a subject they wish to control. It will then modify emotions and behaviors. According to Delgado, the radio stimulation of different points in the brain in four patients produced a variety of effects, including pleasant sensations, elation, deep thoughtful concentration, odd feelings, whatever that means, super relaxation, colored visions, among a plethora of others.
I love how they just talked about all the positive things.
And then there's the
ultra relaxations and
among the, others.
Yeah, there's some other stuff too. Like, we won't talk about those. But yeah. You'd be super relaxed when you don't want to blow up a building.
Yeah. Yeah. Delgado said one of the possibilities with brain transmitters is to influence people so that they can conform with the political system. Autonomic and somatic functions, individual and social behavior, emotional and mental reactions may be invoked, maintained, modified, or inhibited, both in animals and man. By stimulation of specific cerebral structures, psychological control of many brain functions is a demonstrated fact. It is even possible to follow intentions, the development of thought and visual experiences. So, in my non-professional opinion, that's a lot of material that points to at least the possibility that McVeigh was actually fucking chipped. And this all took place. Because there's a lot of cards lining up
that, like,
that suggest it.
That it does actually take place. Because, I mean, like, you could even look into, like, the super soldier program where these guys, like a Manchurian candidate, where they do have triggers, like, that set them off. And the fact that, like, a lot of these guys that, you know, claim to be part of the super soldier program hit a point where they just decide not to be alive anymore, which could very easily be programmed via some of this bullshit they got going on.
Exactly.
Which is...
Exactly. And then how many times, like kind of going back on that, how many times have we heard reports in us looking through the paranormal over the last 6 years of like weird hums in areas?
Oh, yeah. Still going on. Still
exactly. Going on. Exactly. So bizarre. So from there, we're going to move to the bomb itself. The FO bomb that was reportedly used on the building, which stands for ammonium nitrate fertilizer and diesel fuel oil. A year prior to this, the ATF had been blowing up car bombs at White Sands in New Mexico. The project was called Diplomite. It was used to create a computer model that would help unravel terrorist car and truck bomb attacks. So that was their official report on why they were testing
truck bombs. Were they using the same kind of bombs? Were they using the ammonium nitrate bombs?
I think so.
Weird.
I think so.
Weird.
But the thing is, it wasn't ammonium nitrate that actually got used.
All right. Then I retract my statement.
Yeah. So here we go. One of the ATF agents, here's another coincidental thing, ladies and gentlemen. So one of the ATF agents that was assigned to Project Diplomite, which, as a quick reminder, was involved with blowing up car bombs, and it was, Steve, you were right. They were using the ANFO bombs to test these car bombs with. So they were using ammonium nitrate bombs in the car bombs, right? And this ATF agent...
So weird to me.
Was assigned to this project. However, he was also in Oklahoma during the attack.
Oh, of course he was.
His name was Harry Eberhardt. He Conveniently, I was working at the courthouse across the street from the Murrow Building. Moments after the blast, he calls in and explains that several thousand pounds of ANFO had been detonated.
How do you know?
So, of course, people are confused after the fact that an agent, within moments, concluded it was an ANFO attack.
That's my question. How the hell did he know?
Mm-hmm. Even more so, since the last ANFO attack took place on American soil was in the fucking 70s. So 20 years prior was the last time anything like this had been used.
Bro was just dialed in. Like,
yeah.
The building goes down. He's like, yeah. Definitely ANFO.
Now, you could argue that they did enough car and truck bombs during their training to maybe make him suggest this. However, they say there are two major factors in helping identify an ANFO attack. One is fire. The other is lingering nitrate gas. Neither of these were present that day. This can be proven by the lack of fires. And according to sources, the only fires were that of car fires. So probably chain reactions from the initial explosion, catching cars on fire. That was it. The second is that hundreds of rescuers were there and none of them were wearing gas masks. And if there's lingering nitrate gas in the vicinity, I'm sure you're going to want to be wearing respirators. Neither of this took place. Then you have United States Air Force Brigadier General Benton K. Parton. And he noted that while watching this on TV, he could tell that the story was not what they were saying. And this dude, he's like, I was just watching the old boob tube here, and there's just not something right.
Something sus.
So this dude is so keen, he notices exposed rebar on the columns at the third floor. He also knew that an air blast from a truck on the street wouldn't even be close to powerful enough to remove reinforced concrete and steel. He also noticed remaining standing columns between the truck and the one taken out in the left center of the building, which once again was impossible unless charges had been planted. He also found three other columns from magazine photos, a fourth by viewing fire department photos. He then found evidence of a fifth charge having been detonated underneath the children's nursery. The general here in question had spent most of his 31 years in the Air Force around demolition. He headed the United States Air Force Explosive Research Laboratory, so I'd say the guy probably knows a thing or two about explosives.
Knew what he was looking at.
Right.
Which right. You did have accounts that people thought that there were charges planted yep. on the structural pillars.
Not to mention, was it Terry Yeake found evidence, and a lot of people theorize it had to do around the children's section.
Yep.
And he got ghosted
yep.
over it.
Speaking of which, we do have an episode on Terry Yeake on the Patreon. I've got it pinned mm-hmm. to the top. For Patreon members, you can go over there and revisit that.
Yeah.
It just adds to it.
Absolutely. So from there, we go and we take a look at the Ryder truck again, which blew up. And people found, like I said, they found the rear axle with the VIN number on it. Well, Ford wrote to Ted Gunderson saying that Ford does not put vehicle identification numbers on rear axles.
That's weird.
Doesn't happen. And I highly doubt that Ryder does.
That's weird that they would find something that doesn't exist somewhere where it's not supposed to exist.
Yep.
Strange.
People also began to ask questions. If it wasn't an ANFO bomb, what was it? A lot of sources that I was able to find points to...
Missile.
A barometric bomb. And this, apparently, is an insanely powerful bomb that can be tuned in specific ways. It has a process in which a small explosion then mixes with other things and creates another explosion. The process, apparently, is incredibly easy, so I'm not going to put any of the information out there for logical reasons.
But apparently, keep our hands clean of this.
Yeah, apparently it's really, really fucking nasty. So what they're thinking is that the barometric bomb was outside in the truck. This thing, and they can tune it. They can tune this bomb in degrees. They were able to keep the blast radius within 15 degrees. Then you have the charges inside on the columns. Having all this happen creates a disguise for both situations. It sounds a little crazy, however, the exact same thing, some of the exact same reports, like the missile thing coming out of the middle of the building, the exact same reports happened in Africa at an embassy there, not long after the OKC bombing. Eyewitnesses had the same huge explosion, like a missile, through the middle of the building.
Weird.
Fucking, there's no way. There's no way that's just happenstance. That weird. People across the planet are like, yeah, it was like a missile came up through the building when it exploded.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's bizarre, right?
Because that was like one of the main things that stood out from you from episode one was how someone saw a rocket.
Yeah.
A missile.
Yep.
Leave the building.
Yep.
And crash into the damn river.
Yeah. Exactly. And then we chase down, from there, we chase down some of the Middle Eastern claims. I found an account of Middle Eastern men aiding Terry Nichols and McVeigh. There was a man who labeled himself as an international importer and domestic transporter. That was the title he gave himself. Kerry Gagin, whatever. So this dude comes forward and he's like, listen, I'm no choir boy, but I sure as fuck ain't a cold-blooded killer either. So this dude took part in illegal activities, and what he uncovered, he was like, I'm going right to the fucking FBI with this one because I want no part of this shit.
Yeah, he's like, out of my wheelhouse here.
Yeah, so he goes to the FBI. But he says that the FBI, the United States Attorney, and many agents of the United States Marshals knew and let this situation happen. Kerry comes out and says that under instructions of a federal agent, he delivers a mixer and what he believes is bombing materials. Apparently in 94, Gagin, Kerry, whatever, met with two Middle Eastern men which would be a year before, could be a year somewhere. It's 94, bombing happened in 95. But these people moved timers and detonators across the border, and they paid him $250,000 for his service. The thing that fucked him up was that I guess when he was meeting up with these gentlemen, they were in a hotel room, and Kerry witnessed blueprints to the Murrah building.
Weird.
So after moving what he assumed, what he assumed is detonators and bombing materials and so on and so forth, then he also sees blueprints to the Murrah building. He's like, oh. All right, so I'm gonna go to the United States Marshals, and he's like, "Listen, I got some crazy shit I need to tell you about. However, I'm gonna need some immunity here." And they're like, "All right, yeah." So they write it all out. They give him immunity, and he just opens the floodgates, starts telling them everything. He's like, I found out about a bombing and it's going to happen in Oklahoma. But Kerry was saying how over a 6-month period of reporting everything to the marshals. And he's like, they didn't give a fuck about any of it. They didn't care at all. They just completely just ignored everything I was telling them. Because if they would have done their due diligence, none of this would have happened. And then I find a Philippine undercover operative, and one of his wives claims that Terry Nichols had been meeting with Al-Qaeda bombers in the Philippines. They said that Nichols was with another man named John Lepney. Another wife from this undercover dude, so he had multiple wives, another one said that she remembers the meetings and how the Americans were asking on how to make bombs. Then you have evidence, which is nuts if true, that a current and former FBI agents in Oklahoma say that they received documents pointing to another person or cell of Middle Eastern operatives. So you have current and former FBI agents are like, hey, we have evidence claiming that they were basically working with Al-Qaeda to learn how to acquire explosives, learn how to do this, so on and so forth. One former FBI agent said that they obtained 22 affidavits and more than 30 witness statements of seeing McVeigh with Middle Eastern individuals. FBI agents believe that if the evidence had not been suppressed by the FBI, that's a crazy statement to say. FBI agents believed if this information had not been suppressed by the FBI, it could have helped uncover plans leading to September 11th. So they clearly are saying OKC and 9/11 are 100% connected.
Like a little precursor there.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. And one of the, you know, crazy things with the OKC is that there was an anti-terrorism bill that came right after it. And then after 9/11, here comes Patriot Act.
Yeah, it does feel like they're trying to spin that Middle Eastern bombing yarn there, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
There was a former FBI agent that said we had Oklahoma connections to what happened in Washington, D.C. and New York City. We did find out that one of these individuals was trying to take flight training at Norman, Oklahoma Flight School. So one of the connections with OKC after the fact was trying to take flight training in Oklahoma.
Presumably for
9/11.
Interesting.
And then we go back off the deep end. Is McVeigh actually dead? There's a lot of reports that say he isn't. They say that he never wanted to be executed. Supposedly when he was convicted and whatnot, he ends up threatening to blow the lid off everything. He's like, oh, fuck that. That wasn't part of the deal, boys. He ain't putting this dog down. So they make a deal. But how do we get there? So supposedly, as we've covered, the government found out that McVeigh was going to blow up something. So they gently guide him to Oklahoma building, because if he pulls this off, or they, quote unquote, then you can get rid of some documents that were incriminating government records, which also connects to Building 7. So you have that theory coming back into play.
I wonder if the microchip in his ass has like the Find My iPhone feature.
Probably.
Where the government can just like, if he isn't dead, they can just like check him, like just check on an app. See where he
probably
is.
I would assume so. So with this, you get documents destroyed and an anti-terrorism bill passes.
It's kind of convenient.
Just like 9/11. Anyways, the anti-terrorism bill also takes shots at militias around America. Once this happened, they all started to become attacked, and people wanted restrictions or bans on militias. Anyways, we fast forward to McVeigh being sentenced, and he's like, I ain't falling on the sword, boys. We're going to make a deal. So they make the deal. McVeigh doesn't die. He spends 2 weeks on an island on Flathead Lake in northwestern Montana. There, he undergoes a series of silicone injections and other treatments from a CIA-employed plastic surgeon to change all of his facial features. After this, he gets sent to a new location. This all came from, all that information comes from a quote-unquote highly placed contact, whatever you want to make of that. Stuart Webb, who was a federal whistleblower, spoke up about this, saying him and other investigators, including CIA employees, figured some things out. McVeigh did not act alone, including a pair of terrorists attached to an Iranian embassy in Mexico City. One of the Iranians married a woman who worked at the Murrah building to keep up date on activities there, or keep up to date. She was unaware and also killed during the bombing. The CIA was tipped off on McVeigh and guided him to that building to cover up scandals by the Clintons and other national leaders. Some of these sensitive records that were there were mysterious deaths surrounding the Clintons, the Madison savings and loan, Twin Cities Bank, drug money laundering by high government officials, and much more. McVeigh's facial features were altered along with his fingerprints. This is where it gets interesting. According to sources, he was then sent to Area 51.
What the fuck?
Yeah, there's a left turn there, baby.
God, he's an alien. That, you know what? You know what? This makes sense. This makes sense. You know who else shoves things up humans' asses?
Aliens.
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 Hmm. Full circle.
It is full circle.
Full circle now. We've solved it. Full
circle.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me.
It does. But it's not what you think. He gets sent to Area 51 to further his training, because he was never officially trained as like a CIA operative, but they basically put him through rigorous training to ensure that the new country that he's being sent to, he knows how to keep a low profile and is never found out. Some of the things surrounding his execution that are bizarre.
They fed him to the aliens.
They probably did.
The Ebens.
Yeah, they probably did.
Hmm.
They did. Yeah, that makes the most sense. Case closed.
Solved it.
There was some oddities around his execution. Once a prisoner is sentenced to death, they have a ton of chances to appeal. However, McVeigh, on the contrary, wanted to speed things up. While in prison, McVeigh was visited 18 times by Dr. West, who we talked about earlier.
Hmm.
The chairman of psychiatry at the UCLA. However, Dr. West here was also a CIA asset and reportedly in charge of MKUltra.
Well,
you have that.
Obviously.
Ironically enough, he visited Sirhan Sirhan, who was a supposed gunman of Robert Kennedy. Dr. West was also the psychiatrist employed to evaluate Jack Ruby after he shot Lee Harvey Oswald. Ruby also said that there was a huge conspiracy surrounding the JFK assassination and he could expose it, but he wanted to be moved to a safe place, which they did not oblige. It was pointed out that after his execution, the state announced that none of his organs would be donated. People claim this is strange because that when the state executes someone, they own the body, and after the execution, they could get upwards of $200,000 or more for the organs. They would donate them. This was not the case for McVeigh. The state also announced that his medical records would be sealed for 25 years, which is also weird. Why would you need to seal his medical records?
Also very, very much governmental, a very government thing to do.
Yeah. Also, as stated prior, no autopsy would be done after the execution either. They also pointed out that the IV they used was placed into his leg. And according to experts, no major vein is close enough in the leg to get to it with an IV. Susan Carlson, who was a reporter for WLS AM radio in Chicago, said that she witnessed shallow breathing for McVeigh after the injection, even after they pronounced him dead. So there are more than enough oddities in the OKC bombing to ask plenty of fucking questions. Yeah. And I tried chasing down as many fucking rabbit holes as I possibly could.
Oh, there were some.
I can't believe I found that. I can't believe I found as much as I did on the possibility that he could have been microchipped and mind controlled.
I can't believe they took him to Area 51.
I know, it's legit.
That was dope.
It's way, like, it's. That's crazy. I was, once again, it was one of them ones where I'm like, the end result, I'm way fucking happier.
It's crazy.
And I haven't heard anybody talk about any of this shit. No. Which makes it better for us.
I hate that, like, we'll never know.
Oh, no. There's no, you'll never
know. We'll never know.
Never.
The story never that know. We get was that he blew up the truck.
That's and it. That'll forever be That's the story.
It. And then you have all these other, like, tiny little breadcrumbs of, like, hey, that's not. It's not the story.
And what's crazy is that, like, it's not just like one or two breadcrumbs.
No, no.
There are fuckloads.
Dude, like I said, for people that are Patreon members, go back and listen to the Teriyaki episode. If you're not a Patreon member, sign up for just that episode because, like, dude got offed.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Because he saw some shit 100%. Go down and they're like, nah, that was a suicide. You know, like, he stabbed himself 38 times or some shit. And yeah, it's
100%. It's wild.
So sus. It's so sus.
It's wild, dude. It's fucking wild.
It makes you like wonder about all like any kind of major event that takes place. Mm-hmm. How much like how much is different from the story that we're getting?
Oh, 100%. How much is bullshit?
It sucks.
It's crazy. But it's possible. Sucks. It's possible that every major event is orchestrated.
Oh, yeah. And
by the people, obviously they're all orchestrated, but I mean it, and by the people that are supposed to be taking care of us.
It sucks that we're the public sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was Ripper.
Like I said, the second episode is definitely worth listening to.
Yeah.
It's got some wild information. And there's probably more out there. I just ran out of time. But I tried to find as much as I could.
Wouldn't that be crazy to get like a OKC whistleblower or call in?
I hope so. Please let it happen.
Fucking nuts.
What?
Anyway, Holocult, that does it for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Make sure everybody has a good, solid, safe work week. Again, if you are a... government whistleblower, you'd like to call in and talk to us, let's set something up. So check us out on our social medias, you know the drill. And yeah, until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and remember, Holocult, if someone tells you that the government wouldn't do that, yes they would.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.